Thank you so much for listening to the Midlife Rewired podcast. If this content is useful to you, please subscribe, rate, and share with your friends and loved ones. Midlife Rewired podcast. My guest today is Helen Fox. Helen is the Tough Love Coach of Coaches. She's many other things as well. She's also my coach. She is a mother, an entrepreneur, an author, speaker, blogger, podcaster, and overall exceptional human being. Very happy to have Helen with us today. Helen, I'd like to start off by asking you a question about how motherhood has changed the way you approach your coaching business and life in general.
That's a great question, and thank you so much for having me. Yeah. Always great to see you. Motherhood has been a huge change, I gotta be honest. I was naive going into it, thinking, oh, I'll just pop this baby out and keep on going. I kept that naivety for the first probably 2 to 3 months, to be honest. So I, it hit me probably 3 to 6 months later when I realized this is a major adjustment in my life and I have to change some things. And I think as a coach, it's made me more understanding, more empathetic. I've always thought that I was a pretty empathetic person, but I've always been known as a really driven, go-getter, tough on my clients, tough love, of course. Mm-hmm. So that loving part of me, I think, has expanded. I'm still tough on clients, but just having that experience, it's allowed me to relate to a lot more people, a lot more women, parents in general. And of course, it's allowed me to slow down too, right? Because my son, really inspires me to play more. And I think a lot of a type A kind of go-getter individuals, sometimes they forget to slow down and be really present. And that's something I've always worked on, but having that time with my son definitely inspires me to do that even more. Yeah. So
do you think, it's funny, I was at a conference recently and someone said, there's no such thing as work-life balance. And that's something that's always debatable, but, obviously now with, you're a young son and a daughter on the way, what are your thoughts on work-life balance?
I love this question. I do not agree, and I never have, with work-life balance. Okay. I really think it's a blurred line, and I think we're on this earth, and we're here to serve. Not everybody goes after their purpose or even does the work to find what it is. But I know for me, when I'm working, I mean, that's a big part of me, and I don't want the mom side and the wife side and the coach side and the speaker side of me to be completely different. So I really believe from a science of achievement standpoint, when you go after something and you're serious about moving from point A to point B, balance by its very definition does not allow anything to fall, right? But things are going to slip, right. From experience of working with a lot of clients and doing things myself, you're not going to have complete balance in every aspect of your life. Otherwise, that's a pretty safe life with probably not very aggressive goals, right. So I don't love that word. I mean, my perspective has shifted a little bit on it, but to be honest, not really, because I really still believe that if, you want to go after something, you want to achieve great things, you got to achieve good things first. And that requires focus and, your schedule. There's so many things that go into it that will, knock somebody off balance at the beginning. But over time, I mean, of course, you don't want to be burning the candle from both ends. So there's, I also say that, you have to reflect. There's a lot of things that you need to focus on to make sure that things are not too crazy out of balance. Right. There's too much of anything can be a bad thing, even if it's a good thing. So to some degree, yes, I want to have some form of balance in my life, but I've always struggled with that word as a coach. It makes me cringe when people say, you need balance. It's like, well, not always, sometimes you got to do things a little bit differently to get the job done.
Yeah. So would you schedule time then for family where you'll just say, okay, this is, I've got my business and then, okay, I'm going to schedule this period of time. I'm putting my phone away, my computer. I'm going to just be present with my family. He goes to bed and then I got some this scheduled time, and is that how you sort of line your days? Or
yeah, I really believe that discipline equals freedom, right? I really believe that structure is key, and I live and breathe by my calendar. If it's not in my calendar, it doesn't get done, you know? So every week I reflect on the previous week and, you know, what were my wins? What did I learn? Sometimes I overscheduled myself. Usually the case, I rarely underschedule myself, but I have to make sure that, you know, the big rocks, and have you heard that analogy of the big rocks and the small rocks? It's like, if you have all these rocks and you try to fit them in a jar and you put all of the small rocks in first, you can't get the big rocks in. If you get the big rocks in first, which are things like, you know, working out, time with your family, you know, all of that reflection time, all the little things that are so important that most people miss. Those are big rocks. They need to be in there first. Mm-hmm. Then you can put the little rocks in after, right? And so that seems like a really rigid approach when you break it down, but that actually gives you the freedom that, you know, most people are looking for, right, so that they can actually have the things that they want in life and serve at a higher capacity.
Right. The discipline part's huge. And I think that, you know, in the last few years, I've definitely incorporated a lot more of that in my life, with early morning routines and things. And, you know, Jocko Willink, or Jocko Willink?
The name's familiar.
Yeah, so he's discipline equals freedom, Navy SEAL guy, but he's pretty popular there right now. But he's hitting it home on that regard. So based on that, so you are, it's very scheduled, and that totally makes sense. Do you have a morning routine? I'm always curious what people's morning routines are, since I'm such a morning routine guy now. You know, is there something you do every day, or are you dynamic in that regard?
I definitely have a morning routine. I also have an evening routine. I think the best morning routines start the night before,
right?
Because whatever you're going to do that evening, your subconscious can be working on it while you sleep. Both my husband and I are really big on bookends, to the point where if we don't have our bookends, like, the entire day feels off. Right. And so I've learned, especially as a mother, to have a 20-minute bookend that works in the event that you just don't have that full hour or longer if you want it. So I have my shorter version of my morning routine, and then I have my longer version. So there's a lot of things that go into it. It's changed over the years, and I think it's really important to check in and see, okay, what's working right now? Is this still serving me, or do I want to make some shifts in this area? But for me, hands down, quiet time is really important. So silence, prayer, reflection, gratitude. I spend time in scripture. I also spend time with other books, you know, that are in my space, in the, you know, growth, professional development, personal development. Some type of movement is really important for me. I know that after I had my son, I struggled with that one, because I wanted to go hard or go home. And I realized, okay, my body's adjusting. I just had a baby. Sometimes it looks like stretching or going for a walk. So that's definitely in there as well. But I think the key pieces for me are the silence, also gratitude. I've made that a huge practice in my life, morning and evening, reflecting and actually writing it down.
Yeah.
And writing the goals down too, not just, you know, stating them, but actually writing them down and visualizing them as well. So there's a lot that goes, I mean, I could sit here and do a full 2 hours on that, but I'm big on it. It's one of the first things I do with my clients, is help them create not only their bookends, but their entire schedule.
Right.
Because if they don't have the energy to, you know, or the foundation to get through some of those other tasks, I mean, it doesn't really make sense, right? So yes.
So by bookends, you mean bookend morning and evening?
Yeah.
So you prep for the next day, set your mindset, and then in the morning, okay, so that's the bookend.
Yeah, most people, they don't have a lot of control over what happens in the day.
Right.
But you can really control
right.
that first 30 minutes to 60 minutes, and generally the last 30 to 60 minutes, and if that means going to bed a little bit later and waking up a little bit earlier, which is even better, then that's, you know, that's what you got to do.
Yeah. Are you a meditator? Do you meditate? I know you said visualization, but do you meditate?
Yeah, I do.
Is there a technique that you use, or is it very...
I mean, I pray a lot. I definitely do visualization techniques, and I often use guided meditations as well. But yeah, I do, definitely. Yeah. And I love yin yoga.
Yeah.
I love restorative yoga. So anything that's going to, you know, slow me down.
Right.
I'm constantly reminded. I know you said you wanted to ask about the car accident.
Yeah.
But I know in my life over the last, you know, 10, 15 years, there's been a few key things that have reminded me to slow down.
Right.
So yeah, I preach it, but I'm always working to practice it myself as well.
Yeah. Well, we might as well go there now. So, you know, I saw Helen... at a gym. I think we ran into each other. How long ago was it now?
This was last summer.
Last summer.
August of 18.
I saw pictures of the crash. It was a head-on collision. Really scary thing. Mm-hmm. And her son was in the car at the time, which gives me goosebumps just saying that. So maybe you can just tell us a little about that. But I think what I'm curious about is how it's changed your perspective in your life going forward when something so potentially catastrophic happens like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I saw Brian, I think it was like the next day, actually. Funny enough, we bumped into each other, so I was pretty That's disoriented right. that yes. day. Yeah. I remember not quite being 100% with it. But yeah, it was a Sunday afternoon. My husband was driving, and a guy fell asleep at the wheel, and my husband swerved, so it wasn't completely head-on, but it was pretty close enough to send us spinning around and oncoming, which was hands down the scariest thing I've ever experienced. I've never been in a car before with the airbags and that type of impact. And I mean, you can't see anything. You just know you're spinning, and you can smell, you know, the dust from the airbags. And my little guy's screaming. Of course, I started screaming. I can hear my husband, you know. So I will be honest, I thought that was it for us. I mean, I couldn't see. I just knew we were in oncoming, right? And so eventually we luckily landed backwards in a ditch. And they talk about that mama strength. I mean, everything flew around in the car, but I flew out of that car. And I'm thankful we were in a ditch and not in the road, because I didn't look. I just flew out of the car and tried to get my son out. And then, you know, realized what had happened. I mean, I had a concussion and was pretty disoriented for a little while. Some whiplash hurt my hand. But it could have been so much worse. So, I mean, I'm very, very grateful for that. People were like, are you going to sue? Are you going to do this? I mean, it very quickly, we were in a space of absolute gratitude. We lost the car, obviously, but we were just so thankful, you know? So I think it's reinforced the slowing down for me, because I feel I was moving too fast at that time in my life. I was not trying to slow down. I was trying to do everything at the same speed that I was before I had my son. So I think that was a little reminder for me to just slow down and be really present with him, be really present with the family. But at the same time, it wasn't a sign to stop. It was sort of like a slowdown. Yet I also felt this huge drive to do more on more of like a global scale, instead of, you know, we were talking about, I have, you know, a lot of referrals and I've been thankful for that. But there's many things that I know I could be doing, even business-wise, to just get my message out and support people on a bigger scale.
Right.
So I also felt, you know, the drive to do more, and a responsibility is the word that I would use.
Yeah, interesting.
To serve on a bigger scale.
Okay, yeah. So it's interesting, because, I mean, you're already going into that accident. You're already very woke, I would say, just is one way of putting it. But, like, for some people, it does take something like that to sort of feel your mortality and you know, realize that we're not here forever, and every day is a moment to be grateful. And I do a lot of gratitude myself, so I've been doing that for many years. And it was actually Oprah, I think it was like maybe 7 years ago, I started a gratitude journal. So that was like one great habit that I've had. I find it fascinating where, you know, something like that will happen. It happens to people where they lose somebody close to them or something, and then they say, oh my gosh, what am I doing with my life?
Mm-hmm.
What's my purpose? What's my direction? So for you, I think it's just scale in terms of your message. What do you tell your clients? The catastrophic things don't just happen to everybody, but so if somebody wants to make a change, what's the best approach, I think, as far as getting people from A to B in terms of where they want to go?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that goes into it, but sometimes people just don't want it bad enough, you know, and the pain is not strong enough. Like Tony Robbins, one of the things he always talks about is we do things for gain of pleasure or to avoid pain.
Right.
Right. And so many times people are not connected with their purpose. And so, you know, maybe not willing to do the work. They maybe say a goal just because they think it's going to make them look good, or, oh, I want to have a certain body, or I want to make more money. But it's never really about that. There's always something deeper. And so we first and foremost have to get to that deeper purpose of what's really important. Because when a purpose is clear, I mean, you don't need an alarm clock.
Right.
Like, you get up ready to go, right?
Yeah.
But usually people are not connected to the bigger purpose, or they're not connected to the pain. They're doing so much numbing, whether it's through you know, eating, spending money, or whatever that might look like,
yeah.
because they don't want to look at what's really going on
right.
in their lives. So it's a bit of both. We got to get connected to the bigger why, but we also have to get real with their life situation and the consequences and how it's affecting A, B, C, D, E, and F in their life, for them to actually get clear and be in a space that they can actually take the action that's required to right. do it.
So, so that's interesting. Now, I mentioned that we were talking about limiting beliefs, and that's something, you know, I focus a lot with in the content that I produce and what I'm exploring. But so do you go deeper that, so when they have the why, let's say they have a clear why, you know, even if it's not for themselves, they wanted to do something more for their family or whatever, however you attach it to give them that purpose. How do you then give them the belief that they can do it to see past where they can think or see at the moment, like to think bigger?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. A lot of the work that we do is uncovering the limiting beliefs that somebody might have.
Yeah.
And someone has to be open enough to go there, right? I mean, we mentioned that the car accident. One thing I didn't share with you is that I was still carrying almost all of my pregnancy weight, you know, and sort of slipping into that slope of like, oh, well, I'm busy, I'm a mom, right. you know, so I was, you know, nobody's immune to this stuff,
right?
Right. Even as a coach, you know, I do my best to be pretty open and vulnerable with people so that they don't put me on a pedestal, you know? So in that moment, it was like, wow, I'm kind of listening to this excuse of like, oh, well, you're a mom, you know, like you don't have time to get in the gym. And so sometimes these things pop up and our values shift. But we start to listen to the lies that we're telling ourselves, right? So we have to get, the awareness is key. I mean, we've heard it all before. Awareness kind of kickstarts the change process. So we have to start there. We have to be aware of the lies that we're telling ourselves with some of the beliefs that are holding us back. But then we also have to take responsibility. Like that's the next step,
right.
you know, and taking 100% responsibility. I don't care if it was your mom, your dad, a teacher, a past coach, you know, that voice that's in you that you're holding on to and that you're believing that's really not your voice and is really not the truth, yet it's dictating all your behavior and therefore your results.
Yeah.
So we absolutely go deep on that to get to the core of, you know, awareness, number one, taking the responsibility and then figuring out, okay, what's like, let's understand where that came from so that we can actually start to associate new beliefs and move forward. So
yeah.
it's easier said than done. It's definitely deep work. It's not for, you know, those that want to shy away. You got to be courageous to look yourself in the mirror and take that ownership. But that's where it starts.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, you probably noticed this, be interesting to see how you approach this as well. But I think a lot of our limiting beliefs are from childhood experiences as well, where we kind of, a lot of stuff is sort of forged at that time and we kind of, and then that sort of creates those thought patterns that you mentioned, where we let ourselves off the hook and things like that. But do you notice that when you have a client who's open to really being courageous and digging deep, like, do you notice a lot of childhood stuff, or is it usually, how do you approach that? I mean, I know that's almost psychology at that point, but.
For sure. And I mean, I definitely stay in my lane. I find the more experienced the practitioner is, the quicker they will refer out.
Okay.
And so I've always had a really extensive team of other
providers. Oh,
refer. Yeah. Like,
you
know,
if it's then,
absolutely, you know,
so
we've worked with
that.
Trained psychologists and, you know, so when needed, of course, we'll refer out.
Okay.
But you know, coaching, it's not therapy,
right.
but it is therapeutic.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
So we will go into some areas and the first, you know, 3 to 6 years of somebody's life is critical in shaping and forming those beliefs. So we go there. We definitely go there and do have conversations around, you know, who taught you that?
Right.
or, you know, how long have you been holding on to that belief?
Right.
Right. Or, you know, does that serve you?
Yeah.
So absolutely, we definitely go there, and usually it is, you know, from the family, you know, and there's things that have been passed on generationally too, as far as those limiting beliefs that, you know, so it doesn't just go back to the parents,
right.
it's, you know, the grandparents and, you know, and you can't blame, right? Because if you're going to blame for the not so good, you got to blame for all the good. Right. So it's really important to not be in a blaming space, but recognize where some of these beliefs come from. So that you can actually, you know, interrupt those patterns and create change.
Yeah, that's interesting. A lot of people do waste a lot of time blaming, living in the past for something you can't change. But I find it so fascinating that it's like, You know, there's environment, and then, but there is things that are passed along through generations that we just can't control. So we have our baseline, and
yeah,
we can just work with what we've got.
So. Absolutely.
So if you were, let's go back to a young Helen. Then did you like? Have you always wanted to? I know you were in athletics as well, but like, was coaching something that was in your DNA, or did you expect to end up going down this path?
I mean, I didn't grow up thinking I wanted to be a coach,
right.
But I did know pretty early on that I really enjoyed helping people.
Yeah.
So I love transformation. I mean, I was sharing with you, I even was a DJ in my college days, and I mean, I love being able to influence a crowd, right, and have people feel good. And I mean, it's funny that you ask that, because a while ago I was reflecting back, and at my parents' house I found literally a cost analysis kind of breakdown of a friendship bracelet business that I had in like the sixth grade. I'm like, wow. So even then I was, really, trying to, service those individuals and okay, what color do you want? And really, I remember being really into that, and I probably was in the fifth grade or something like that. So I've always had that desire to help people, whatever that looks like. And it's just taken different vehicles, I think, in my life. And then because I fell into personal training with my athletic background, the gym was the most comfortable place for me, and I recognize it's not for a lot of people, and so I really enjoyed helping people in the gym setting. And of course all the habit changes that come with that led me into teaching success principles and helping people in all aspects of their lives. So the short answer is no, I didn't say I want, but I did want to be a teacher.
You did. Okay. So you're a teacher,
It works.
I think it's a healthy thing to try to visualize back to your childhood years and really kind of get back to where your dreams were before the world came in and told you had to go down this lane or that lane, or you can't do this or that. So it's interesting. We talk about the gym. So I mean, I know that I think you've had a lot of different mentors over the years, but one in particular, Charles Poliquin, who I was a big fan of as well, during the bodybuilding years, that he was a great coach. So I know he taught you lots of things. But what would you say, maybe you could just, for people who don't know Charles Poliquin, you could just kind of let them know.
And
maybe what he taught you. Because I know he had probably one of the greatest influences on you that I'm aware of.
For sure. As a coach, if I had to say my number one influence, it would definitely be Charles Poliquin. Not just in the coaching space, but even in the business space too. I mean, it was such a shock to all of us last year. The strength community lost a great legend in Charles Poliquin. I was lucky enough to have worked with him one-on-one and be mentored by him early on in my career, and he taught me so much. It's hard to narrow it down to one thing.
Right.
I think even when my husband used to tell me, like, if he had a dollar for every time, I said, Well, Charles says. So I've always, referenced him many times. I mean, speaking of discipline earlier, one of his top, I think, blog post was around, discipline's a myth, right? So he was really big on, he didn't show always that softer side of him, but getting clear with your purpose and being connected to what matters. He was also really big on focusing on one or two things at any given time, not 10, to create that change and, with a client to build that trust, build that confidence, have the, personal integrity to do something and to create the habits that are going to create the change. And, when I reflect on Charles, the biggest lessons are life lessons. Like, I learned so much from him from a science standpoint in the gym and nutrition and supplementation. But if I were to really pinpoint, like, the lessons, they're more about service to individuals and, business and just life success principles mm-hmm. that obviously made him the man he was. It's really hard to narrow it down to a few, but... And sorry, to your first question, I mean, Charles was a phenomenal strength coach who definitely didn't care about what other people thought.
Yeah.
He was always ahead of the research and was able to help so many athletes on many levels, NHL athletes, NFL athletes, Olympic athletes. His resume is ridiculous and definitely a leader in the strength community and, globally recognized. So I feel very fortunate to have been mentored by him.
Yeah. I mean, it's I used to enjoy your stories too. It's no bullshit, hard-ass approach for some people who certain questions, whatever, would seem to trigger him. But it was always,
absolutely.
Yeah. So as far as like your coaching clients, so like if there's like one thing you think that people get most stuck on in their lives, what do you think that would be?
I would say taking responsibility, you know, because a lot goes into that. Courage goes into that. That's a big one. And not listening to excuses. I think that's probably the, you know, everybody has a story, right? And they're believing a certain story and they can choose the story, but people often don't recognize or realize that maybe when they come to me. So I think that taking ownership on the story that you've been telling yourself and taking ownership on, you know, it being 100% you that's required to change that story. You know, not your work situation, your spouse, your kids. I think people don't realize sometimes the stories that are holding them back. So that'd be a big one.
Yeah. I always hear about tell yourself different stories, right? And or tell different stories too, right?
Yeah.
I guess there's probably some people you just can't get through to. I would assume that there's the odd, like, I don't know what that percentage would be. There must be some people you just, like, they just won't take responsibility, so you can't help them.
Well, I think, I mean, maybe earlier in my career, I would have more of those stories, but right. I mean, I would say in the last, I don't know, maybe the last 6 or 7 years, I mean, I don't work with everybody, right? So there's certain questions that I ask and screen clients, and sometimes I just know that person's not in a state of change, and I don't want to waste their money. I don't want to waste my time. So it's important to me that because I mean, we talk about energy, right? Like I have to like my clients and I have to be, I have to feel that they're committed to creating change.
Yeah.
Otherwise I wouldn't work with them, but you're right. I mean, it's, I mean, they're doing the work. I'm facilitating the conversations that are going to create those aha insights, you know, that are going to help them through this process, but I'm not necessarily doing the work. I work hard, but they need to care about their lives more than I do. And I care a lot.
Yeah.
So that's my rule. It's I can't be more passionate about your change than you are.
Right.
So that's, you know, there's a certain standard, I think, which is important for coaches to be aware of. You know, you don't want to just work with anybody with a credit card, that's for sure.
Right, exactly. So you're stacking the deck in your favor that way.
Exactly.
Like the good to great clients, I guess. So I noticed that you're writing a book, or is the book finished?
It's not quite finished, but it's close. It's very close,
What's the book about?
It's about the responsibility to play at a higher level. You know, you're talking about... a lot of the stuff we talked about. And I will say, I'm learning with this book that done is better than perfect, because I actually did write a book a while ago, and I never put it out because it was so much on that.
Would you say done?
Done is better than perfect.
Okay, cool.
You know? Yeah. Because the initial draft of this book that never did get put out was very much on the how-to, you know, how to be your best self, all that kind of thing. And, you know, I just didn't really have peace about it because I knew that there was so much more to the combination lock.
Right.
And so with this book that I'll be putting out is definitely has a bit of the how-to, but it's really more around the why, like the responsibility that we have to play at a higher level and to not be complacent and to not be mediocre.
Yeah.
So I definitely took a different direction with it, and it has pieces from the initial draft, but it's more on the why.
Right. So it'll have to take a bit of a back burner, at least for the next few months.
we'll see. My goal is to get it out. I wanted to have it out actually before I have this baby, but I think that's going to be finished, manuscript ready, with the goal of having it out next year. So I still want to get it out next year. I just don't know if the manuscript will be completely ready before I go into labor.
We're talking about podcasts before too. It's kind of that thing too. I have that feeling where I don't want to release things until I think they're perfect. But from what I've learned and what I've talked to a lot of authors too, it seems that nobody hits it out of the park in their first book either. It's like 2-3 books and then the fourth one is the one.
Right.
So,
yeah. Like, no, that's something I have definitely had to learn and repeat, you know, because perfectionism is not something to be proud of, you know, and I mean, it doesn't exist, right? If you're perfect, then everybody else is imperfect.
Right.
So, you know, we can't take that approach, right? So, you know, you do your best at that given day and, you know, you learn and grow as you move forward. And so, I mean, that's definitely something I've had to learn myself.
Yeah. So, I think we'll just finish with, like, I guess, with mindset. So I'm reading a book right now. I've read a lot of books recently, but this is like the growth mindset versus the fixed mindset.
Carol Dweck.
Yes.
It's a great book.
Yeah, it is great. And, but like to create that growth mindset from someone who's really in a fixed mindset, is there like a hack or a tool or something that you use?
Well, I mean, environment is so key. I mean, most people maybe they have the information or they have the tools, but they get sucked back in because their environment is one that, you know, doesn't allow them to keep growing. So, I mean, that's a quick fix in the sense that you can alter your environment dramatically. But I mean, it's a tough one because again, it comes down to the beliefs, right? Like whether you have a fixed or a growth mindset. You know, it goes back to, you know, things you heard as a, as a child even, right? Meaning like, oh, you know, that's great work, you know, associating hard work with a result versus, oh, you're so smart, right? That'll develop, you know, a fixed mindset. I'm either smart or I'm not, right? So it's never, I mean, I'd be lying if I said there was a hack or a quick fix. It's a consistent effort to, you know, learn about yourself and take that on as a real, you know, we go to college or university for X amount of years, but a lot of people don't take the time to learn about themselves, why they do certain things, right? And so I think that it starts there of, you know, immersing yourself in those type of books and other people who think the same way. And being really selective with your environment, you know, on so many levels, you know, your actual, the physical environment, as well as, you know, the people, the conversations that you have. Mm-hmm. So all of those things are really important. And a willingness, a joyful willingness, I'll say, to change.
Yeah.
You know, not dragging your feet across the finish line, that doesn't work. Right. Yeah, so yeah, it's like being willing to be open to change and learning about yourself.
Yeah.
Which isn't easy.
No, but I mean, I think we'll close there with the joyfulness. I mean, I think that's so important. It's, I was, you know, more of a destination guy, I guess, before. I would train for this particular thing, or I would do crunch for this particular thing, and then I would hold back again. And, you know, you don't have consistency or momentum that way, you know, so it's, but really embracing the struggle, being joyful through the whole thing, through the discipline and everything, because every single day you can't stop doing anything. It's like, it's interesting. You feel that you get to a certain point and you can coast. Well, I've tried that. it works, but then you have to start over again, you know?
Right. So,
but yeah. I mean, being joyful through the whole thing, I think is a massive, massive thing in terms of happiness. And
yeah. The art of success and the science of goal achievement, both are important, right? Understanding the principles behind success, but you know, knowing what success is for you. And being happy and content, and you know, it's not always going to be easy, but being able to appreciate all the learning lessons along the way for sure.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Ellen. I appreciate you coming here today. Actually, this is a good one. There's a lot of good stuff in there. I'm going to have to re-listen to this myself because there's a lot of great things. But thank you so much for taking the time before your baby, and hopefully your water hasn't broken over.
We're okay. We're okay. No, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Awesome.